So he was saying, Rinpoche, about you have founded Bodhicharya, Rigu Trust, and Karmapa Foundation as
thank you.
The representative of His Holiness, the 17th Karmapa Orgen Trinian Dorje. And we are so happy and so fortunate to have you here, to have accepted, for having accepted our invitation. And so I think that we do really hope to have here in the future to bestow us your precious teachings. And I once more sincerely thanks Paolo Maestri and Rick Passang in Bologna, because the collaboration is the foundation of the, in my view, of the Sangha, and we are really non-sectarian and so forth. I will let you the mic.
Thank you.
And for this very precious conference on the Nimen movement, so we have the opportunity to have one again, the most important reverend living Rimei master here in Bologna. The very first time I wrote to Bernie Hartley was, I remember, 3 years ago, asking if it would be possible to have you, and finally we had such opportunity. So once more, Rinpoche, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your kindness, and I will try in my broken English to translate your perfect English.
Thank you so much for too elaborate introduction. I'm very happy to be here, and today I learned something about Bologna thanks to Dr. Paola, and I'm very impressed. This is a very special place with very ancient, you know, seat of learning and lots of things. I'm mainly asked to talk about Rimei. So, you know, it's working, not working. I can do this.
The audio.
We check. Please use.
If you can use this. Yeah.
It's not working here. So
is it? It's
for the Zoom.
Oh, we'll see.
Sorry, Rinpoche, after I will translate.
Okay.
Sorry.
So the... I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but... you know, the word Rimei is a Tibetan word which in long and short means non-sectarian. Ri is like boundaries, you know, the kind of things you put to divide things, and me means no boundaries, nothing to divide. And, you want to? I was very inspired by this attitude because of my teachers, most of my teachers, like Jamgon Kontrol of Sechen, and Tengkun Chenche Rinpoche, and you know, of all the masters, His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama, they all spoke very, very highly of Rimei and Rimei masters. And what the Rimei way of being or practicing Dhamma was. But when I studied more about this approach and this understanding. I found that actually the whole Dhamma was remade. Buddha's approach was remade. And approach of every great master who came from India and taught in Tibet were remade. And the founder of all Tibetan Buddhist schools were all remade. There was nobody who was not really remade, actually. Because the Buddha said again and again that he teaches not just what he knows, but he teaches what is needed for the students. Different people need slightly different approaches and different methods and different, you know, ways of practicing. And therefore he said it in many sutras everywhere, in this Sarvakayana level, Mahayana, Vajrayana, that he taught 84,000 different ways. Yeah. And he says, one teaching cannot be considered as better than the other, and one teaching should not be considered worse than other. But, you know, you can choose whatever teaching actually can touch you and can help you. That teaching you can use on yourself, and then regard others with respect. Maybe you can learn some from these teachings also. Maybe you don't. That's beside the point. If you sometimes you can receive some of the teachings, and then they might be actually very useful for you and make your own practice much deeper and help your own practice become better. If you don't want, that's also okay. That's what the Buddha said. And the same thing was mentioned by every great master. Yeah. Of course, in Buddhist tradition, maybe I should first let you say that. You know, in Buddhist traditions, you have the system of debating. There has been lots of debates between many great masters, and there is a saying, if two philosophers agree, one is not a philosopher. But if two saints don't agree, one is not a saint. There is a story that once, you know, in the Nalanda University, one Chandrakirti, a very, very great master of Madhyamika philosophy, and Chandra Gomin, another, his real name was Chandrakirti also, but he had, you know, slightly, because to make it different from him, the other one, he was called Chandra Gomin. It is said that they debated for, I don't know, about 13 years, every day. And it was considered that both of them were fully realized beings. Then why did they debate? There's a nice story that one time Chandrakirti was teaching his class under a tree, because that was the way that time. And then somebody came, not wearing robes, but ordinary clothes, with a stick. And he was standing at the end of the class, was listening. And sometimes he was laughing a little bit, with some kind of attitude that he was not agreeing. And then, when after the class finished, he asked, you know, "Who are you?" "Oh, I'm just a pilgrim." "What's your name?" "Oh, my name is akin to yours, same like yours." "What did you study?" "Oh, I did study just one sutra and one tantra, name of the Manjushri. That was the, you know, tantra, and then another sutra small." He understood that he was very, very good scholar, because these two essentialize all Buddhism. Then he says, "Are you Chandragomin?" He said, "Some people call me by that name." Then he says, "Then you must go back, because I have to receive you properly. I have to make a real, you know, honorable reception." So he sent him back, and then he created everybody, he called everybody and make a procession and, you know, and chariot, and he was asked to sit in the chariot and then brought him, but he didn't want to sit on the chariot because he said, "I'm just an ordinary person. I cannot sit in the chariot when, you know, all of you great masters, great monks walk on the..." So they already had a debate there. But then said, "Okay, then you carry image of Manjushri so that you are a carrier." So finally sat down with Manjushri. And then when he was coming in, he composed a kind of a prayer to Manjushri. And this, that Manjushri prayer was so good, so well done, that Manjushri looked back, the image looked back, and that image was still there for a long time in Nalanda University, they say. So then they stayed not very far from each other, and they debate for 13 years. But, you know, nobody won, nobody lost. Because the debate was not about who is right and who is wrong. The debate was about how to present the experience, Dharma, with right words. So when you say that it should be presented in this way, and the other say, if you present it that way, it could be misunderstood like this, so it could be other way. And then the other says, no, if you present your way, it could be so like this. So most of the debates are not about, you know, that somebody is wrong or somebody is right, but about how the way you present could be understood rightly or wrongly. And so in this way, debate was taken as a very important way of learning.
Can I kindly ask you to keep the mic near, more closer?
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
There are some concerns for
thank
the
you.
Sound. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay.
Do
thank you.
Need some water?
No, I'm okay. So therefore, you know, I don't want to go through all the different things, but most of the great masters' instruction was that all the teachings you can find are, you know, are ways to transform yourself. And all the treatises that you see are instructions on how to do that. That's what Atish Dipankara said. And that's not just Atish Dipankara said, that was the main teaching of almost everybody. So therefore, in Tibetan Buddhism, actually, everybody tries to practice all the three anas. Three anas as a way to practice by one person. And you know, if you really look into the practice of the Tibetan kind of any Tibetan school, they take the Vinaya as the basic way of life, Bodhisattva's experience and attitude as the main training, main aspiration, and Vajrayana as the most inner practice. That's same with all Tibetan Buddhist practices. And, when I was writing this, I was doing this research, I made a questionnaire with a few questions. And then I asked, you know, from Dalai Lama down to, you know, all the head of all these schools of Tibetan Buddhism, these questions, and asked them to answer me what they say. There was one question which said, do you think that if someone practices one of the other schools of Tibetan Buddhism, not yours, will they become enlightened or not? And I got so much shouting. I've never received so much shouting by Tibetan lamas as that time, because everybody shouted at me, how can you ask such a question? You are supposed to be a tulku. You are supposed to be studying Tibetan Buddhism, and you dare to ask such a question? You know, of course, that's not a question, you know. So therefore, there was absolutely, you know, it was considered kind of totally unaskable question, because it is not even in the head of anybody that such a question. So therefore, you know, the root understanding of Buddhism by any great master is rime in their nature. But of course, I think this is one reason that each school, each monastery has to promote their own things and promote their own studies, their own traditions, their own things like that. So when you do that, sometimes you do that too much, as if yours is the only one which is very good and the rest not so good, kind of, you know. So many times people get, I think, a little bit misunderstood that, you know, because this practice, this system, this way of doing in our tradition is so good that nothing is better than this. And from that, sometimes people, oh, we cannot do anything else, that will be not good. I think some of the things happen like that. And therefore, you know, not in order to attack others, but because of wanting to, you know, protect and also, you know, what can you say, promote your own school, monastery, teacher, things like that. Sometimes it sounds as if that's the, you know, the best thing. And of course, if you want to study with one teacher, if you want to practice only one part of the great treasury of teachings, that's very welcome. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. From Rime way of understanding, it's not that you have to study everybody. You have to receive all the teachings. You have to mix everything up. That's not the tradition. The tradition is that, yes, if you want, you can study with one teacher. If you want, you can study two masters, three masters. You know, some of the great masters had 50 teachers, also very, you know, like main teachers. And you can do that if you want. And also to understand that actually if you study with one teacher and guided by one teacher and practice one kind of practice, that's very good, that's very useful. But also, if you might listen to another teacher and another teaching, it could actually help you to understand things a little bit better also. I know from my own experience, because I have studied with many great masters, many teachers, many geshes and kempos of all schools, all my life. And I can say very clearly, without any doubt, that there was not a single time that because I studied from two different traditions and two different masters and two different scholars, that I got confused whether which one was right or which one was wrong. Each teacher, when they tried to explain, it was said in a slightly different way. No teacher can say it exactly the same way. So two teachers can talk about the same topic. Sometimes you find something clarifies, something that your understanding can become a little bit more deeper or more clearer. So therefore, it is also not necessary, even if you want to practice only one teaching and guided by one teacher, it's not necessary that you have to exclude, because sometimes people feel that if I study with two or three or different, I may get confused. That's totally not the way. How, that's not how it happens. So that's why, you know, from Rime point of view, it's not that you have to mix up everything. It's not that you have to practice everything. It's not that you need to kind of go everywhere and receive things and practice things, everything. It's just that you need to understand this, that whole teachings of Dhamma is one great treasure. There are so many things there. There are so many, you know, instructions there. There are so many different type of, you know, instructions, you know, methods, and all kind of things there. And actually, the differences are good. This is the main thing. You know, the main understanding and approach of the Rimet tradition is that, you know, if you find something different, some teaching, some tradition, some special, and it is different, a little bit different lineage may be, different method may be, then it is very useful. It should be preserved. Because, you know, Buddha himself said that, you know, he has written, he taught so many different ways and different means. So those, something a little bit different, should be preserved and make sure they don't disappear. That is why, you know, Jamyan Chenche Ombo and Jamgo Kontrol Rinpoche made so much efforts to make a collection of all the teachings, authentic teachings coming from India, or, you know, discovered in different parts of Tibet. They do not get lost. So they compile them together into what we call now as the five treasures. And so that, you know, one can actually receive the teachings, the empowerments, and all kind of transmissions of all of them, and they can be practiced, they can be, you know, transmitted, and they can be preserved. If that was not done at that time, most of those teachings could have been lost by now. Because if you don't put in a collection like this and print it and publish it in those kind of collections, then when what happened in Tibet afterwards would have totally, you know, been of them. So this is one of the main things, that if even you see something that is not exactly like your tradition, it's not something that you have to let go, but you have to preserve it, because even if it may not be the most suitable thing for you, it will be something that might be very useful for somebody else. So therefore, the differences are not looked at in a bad way, but differences are looked as something special and something, you know, needs to be preserved. I remember that Thingpa Chetse Rinpoche, when he was, you know, the head of the Nyingma school, he was the main kind of a teacher of the Bhutan king, and he was totally busy day and night to give all kind of transmissions and teachings. And sometimes, you know, he would find that one pilgrim, maybe an old lama or somebody like that coming from Tibet, had one particular teaching that he had received, which he hadn't received. He would ask him to remain and receive those teachings himself. And sometimes he would ask others, like his own students there, like myself, to come and receive this teaching. So therefore he was, you know, looking for some teaching that he had not received. He would receive it even when he was in very advanced age, and he was so busy, and he had so much things to do also. It was, you know, that was the attitude, you know. And also the, you know, His Holiness Dalai Lama, you know, he received teachings. He was, you know, Geshe Larampa. Of course, he was very highly realized, highly, you know, studied and a great master in all the Gelug teachings. But he was always trying to find someone from other schools. You know, if they had some special teaching, they had some special instructions. Despite of his busy schedule, despite of his all the, you know, engagements, he wanted to study them, he wanted to practice them, he wanted to receive these teachings. And he keep on, you know, doing that. Not only that he received those teachings, but he actually practiced them. He actually taught them, you know. That was the main, you know, the whole, his life was like that. Actually, the reason why he had problem with this, you know, I think most of you know that he had problem with one protector, Gelugpa protector. He didn't like that. He requested people not to practice that protector because it was said that if you, you know, that protector will keep you pure Gelugpa. And if you, you know, it will, you, if you practice or if you receive teachings from other schools, they will punish you. Just to keep the Rime movement alive and to protect that, he, you know, he was against that. And he had lots of problems with that, but that was the only reason. There was nothing else. So therefore, you know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama is actually the embodiment of Rime movement. You know. And Rime movement is not something different from, you know, like you can be Gelugpa and be Rime, you can be Kajupa and be Rime, you can be Nyingmapa and being Rime. It's just an attitude, it's just an approach. I was always thinking that, you know, it's not just for Tibetan Buddhists, it's the understanding and the use and the practice and the attitude of Rime is the most uniting force, most useful thing. But it could be used to unite the whole Buddhist traditions, because actually it's exactly the same way. You know. Whether it's Theravada, whether it's different kind of, you know, Mahayana traditions, you can very much come together, you can very much learn from each other, you can very much practice together, you can respect each other even if you don't want to practice. Not only that, but I think it, I was actually once or twice in interreligious dialogues, and there also I felt that the, if we really used this approach of Rime, it could be one of the most authentic way of uniting and bringing all different kind of spiritual traditions together. Because you don't have to be similar to each other. You don't have to, because I found that when there is a conference on like interreligious dialogues, then one master says, yeah, we are all same because it's like my religion, my way of saying. Another comes and says, oh, we are all same because it's like me. Of course, there are lots of similarities. You know, you cannot find anything where there is no similarity. That's very good to emphasize the similarities. But there are differences. But we can't just neglect or just, you know, ignore these differences. But these differences are not bad. You know, we can highlight those differences, and, you know, we can respect them. We can use those differences to understand more for each other, and then I think it will be true interreligious, you know. So I think this can become a very important and very usable, you know, way of bringing together, because we are all human beings, and of course, you know, we wish good for each other. We wish wisdom, kindness, compassion, you know, all positive things. There are differences in philosophies, maybe, but that philosophy's differences are, you know, we just can understand them, respect them. For some, it's useful, that's very good. We should respect them. And if we learn how to do that, then we can have true, you know, true harmony. So maybe, you know, it's not a good way that I just talk by myself. I don't know what's going on. I don't know, you know, you have some other questions or, you know, things that you want to discuss. So maybe I should spend more time on discussing, because if you want to learn more about the Remi approach, you can learn from Professor.
He
seems to be in really very well versed and, you know, a great master on Rime as well as on many other things.
Oh. So I did invite the audience to raise the hands in case of a question.
Yes, or anything, you know.
Anything.
Question or comment or, you know, anything. Yes.
The question is concerning to have several masters.
Uh-huh.
And she is a student of the late Sogyal Rinpoche, and especially after his death, she was so committed, because through the process after his death. So she said that she's a little bit lazy in order to regularly and strongly practice, and even if she's received empowerments or teachings from other masters, she is asking how it's possible to conciliate somehow the situation, a situation of some difficulties to be constantly practicing, still having received teachings or empowerment from other masters. How to conciliate somehow? This is more or less the question of Rinpoche.
This is kind of a Tibetan Buddhists like to receive empowerments, you know. We receive lots of empowerments. You know, I've received like hundreds and thousands of empowerments. Actually, Guru Padmasambhava encouraged that. What Guru Padmasambhava said, receive at least one empowerment a year. If you lived for 100 years, you would have received 100 empowerments. Even if you didn't practice at all, because of this, if next time, if you are born as an animal, you will be born as a strong animal. That's his words. So, you know, that's the Tibetans always receive impermanence. How to do that, how to practice that, is also we have a way. You know, the main thing is, the main practice is myself. You know, this Yidam, this, you know, Guru Yoga, this practice is not the practice. I am the practice. Yeah? So therefore, whatever you want to change, whatever, you know, practice you do, if it helps, if it, you know, works on you to transform yourself, that's the practice, you know. And so he will translate, no problem.
She's curious.
So therefore, you know, it's also important to put all practice into one. That is that, you know, whatever practice you do, maybe you don't do many different practices, you don't need to do all different practices, but you need to do at least one thing that really helps you, that really transforms you. And then feel that all other practices are included in that, you know. And then that's enough, you know. Like usually we do like Guru Yoga, for instance. Whether we do Guru Yoga or even we do refuge, we include all the Buddhas, all the Lamas, all the Yidams, you know, all the Bodhisattvas, all the in that, you know, and do it as a practice. So therefore, it's not necessary that we have to do each and every one. Of course, if you do, it's okay, but it looks like you are a little bit like me, who is also very busy, very, very lazy. I call myself Lazy Lama. I even have a series, a book called Lazy Lama Series.
Yeah.
Very small, you know, just 20 pages, 30 pages. I don't understand why people can read books this way. This thing.
I was joking, saying that in the Italian custom there is a saying during the wedding that if you want to speak now or never more. So the silence is the room as the sunset. Se non ci sono domande, so it seems that no questions arise from the audience, Rinpoche.
Okay.
So, we are about to conclude this wonderful teachings we have received by Rinpoche. We really, from the deep of our heart, thank you so very much, His Eminence, Ringu Tulku Rinpoche, and let me, Rinpoche, humbly, formally, do invite you to come back to Bologna in the future.
Thank you.
We will be blessed if you will accept, and you will come again to Bologna. So I do hope.
Thank you so much. Of course.
And I kindly ask you, Rinpoche, to accept the kata, the kata to the master.
Okay. Thank
you. From the audience.
Thank you so much.
From Venite dal lato del maestro.